Good morning and welcome to the 8th episode of Classical Voice Canada, where we meet artists and discuss classical voice together. I'm your host, Kira Braun, and I'm so very glad you've joined us today. Today's guest is Turkish-Canadian mezzo-soprano Beste Kalender. Beste, hello, and welcome to Classical Voice Canada. How are you today?
Hi, Kira. It is great to be talking to you right now. I'm great. Thank you. Hello, everyone.
Yes, hello, everyone. Beste, I'm so happy to be speaking with you today because you're such a vivacious and engaging person and singer and artist, and I have a lot of questions for you today, the first of which is that I would like to know more about your young life in Turkey and what it was that got you interested in singing, in particular being an opera singer.
Oh, first of all, thank you very much for all these wonderful, kind words. And yes, looking forward to all your questions. So in Turkey, I was in this household where everyone had a great interest for the arts, let it be music or literature. And my father, who is a self-taught musician and composer, who also worked at the bank when I was little, my mother always loved writing poems and stories and reciting poems as well. So art was always a big part of our lives. And my father named me Beste, which means musical composition, actually, in Turkish.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Well, he hoped that, you know, I would be maybe interested in Turkish pop music or Turkish classical music. So the name would help us for PR purposes, but you know, what can you do? But I mean, my father would be primarily interested in Turkish pop music or Turkish rock music, and he would have his band. Yeah, he would, in the morning he would work at the bank, in the evening he would have gigs with his orchestra.
Fantastic.
They also have competitions. And even though he was primarily interested in those things, my family, my parents, they were very open to different kinds of music. So they would watch classical music concerts, jazz. They would really like to know anything they can, you know, from the rest of the world. And I guess I was around 5 or 6 years old. They were watching this classical music concert. And I come to the living room and I see all these instruments playing together. In the middle, there's this lady with a huge red gown, ball gown, and making this incredible sounds. And of course, I don't know what it is, but I just point at it and I say, I want to be this. I mean, I don't remember the details, but my mom is like, you were so sure. So we never questioned what you want to be in the future. So
wow.
I owe it all to that lady in the ball gown. Not my interest in music, because that comes from family, but specifically opera.
Yes.
That lady.
Do you know who she is? Did you ever find out who the lady in the red puffy dress was?
Unfortunately not, but I know what program was it. It was one of the leading conductors of Turkey, actually. Hikmet Şimşek was the anchor for this classical music show, and he would actually bring classical music concerts from all over the world to Turkey, basically, with this program. But I have no idea. You know, I never had a chance to even look for who she was, but I really hope, when I also started working as a professional, I just hope that one day I can inspire a young, talented soul, just like how that person inspired me. It was not the person per se, because I was very little. I didn't know what was going on, but really what she symbolizes. I needed to see her. I needed to hear that sound to be inspired. She is my muse. And it is just wonderful to know that, you know, that happened, that inspiration happened.
Of course. And I'm sure that you already have inspired many young singers in the short time that you've been performing, and that you will inspire many more. I can definitely see that with you.
One thing though, when I had my first big concert at Kerner Hall in 2014, I actually got my puffy red ball gown. I said, I want to be her. Now I am her. And let the inspiration begin.
Excellent. Good way to manifest that person and bring her. Yeah, channeling the person again. Yeah. Beste, your educational path has had some twists and turns. Explain where it all began. What did you study in Turkey? And then when you came to Canada, what did you begin your studies with?
Well, I think they kind of complemented each other, what I did. In Turkey, in middle school, high school, primary school, I was always singing, playing the piano, but also I was very studious. I was very curious as a young person. So for me, getting good grades was not necessarily something that I had to do to, you know, to be loved by my parents or to feel good about myself. I just love to learn. So my grades were always high. And in Turkey, we have the system. You enter a 3 hours examination to be able to go to a university. According to your final score, you can pick certain universities. And then according to the selection by the government, you have the opportunity to get into that university.
I see.
So what happened is, I knew I was going to be going to the conservatory because from high school years, Istanbul State Conservatory, they liked me. They said, at university, you are here. You don't have to think about it. But then they also saw my score. I was in the first percentile in Turkey. And they said, what are you doing with your life? I'm like, I want to be an opera singer, right? Then I talked to my teacher back at the conservatory, and she did also marketing while she was performing professionally. And then we talked, and I decided that, especially because of the conditions at the time in Turkey, I wanted to train myself to be a well-rounded person, a musician, but also aware, well-rounded person. So I started first with philosophy, and then I was interested in psychology. So I transferred to psychology at Boğaziçi University, which is one of the leading universities in Turkey. And I took all the necessary training from the conservatory as well. So I went to two universities. In the morning, my morning classes was in the Boğaziçi University for psychology. I was doing my lab work. I was also taking, the university gave so many great language courses like French, Italian. I was taking those. I was also performing in the clubs. Then in the afternoon, I would take the boat on the Bosphorus with the seagulls. We would go to the other end, to the Anatolian side, you know, to take the music classes. Wow. So I came here towards the end of my undergrad years. The system in Turkey has changed. They said, unless you finish a 4 or 6 years of conservatory degree, you cannot apply for the auditions at the state opera.
Oh, wow.
So, yes. And I realized that the conservatory degree, nevertheless, I thought about, you know, graduating, then switching to conservatory full-time again and to be able to apply for the state opera. But I realized that conservatory degree doesn't have any equivalence to many schools outside of Turkey. So I just said to myself, let's do this. Let's go out and figure this out. Also, my teacher agreed with me, my voice teacher. And also, I loved doing psychology too. So I focused my last two years of undergrad. I focused on music perception and developmental psychology related research. And I applied for graduate programs who are also interested in these subjects, because I thought, first of all, I love singing and I want to be an opera singer, but I am very young. In Turkey, I need to decide yesterday what I want to do with my life. I'm a woman, young woman. I need to stand on my 2 feet and I need to be independent. So I need to use all my skills. So I applied to graduate programs. I got accepted from U of T, developmental professor who is wonderful. She's still one of my biggest supporters, even in for the, you know, my singing career. And I started doing my PhD program on music cognition and developmental psychology while auditioning, working. So I think because also my research and my thesis, it was about music cognition, then also aging and cognition, developmental psychology, again, everything related to music. I actually met a lot of musicians, like most instrumentalists at Tafel Music Orchestra. Actually, I met them because I was testing them.
Oh.
So, you know, I use that to also have a bigger networking to IDTBSI. So yeah. I don't see it. Yes, it was a bit maybe busy instead of doing it right away. It was very busy, but it was very fulfilling. And I met so many wonderful people along the way. And I think in a way they complemented each other.
Absolutely, they would have. So after this long and winding road, you began at the Glenn Gould School. Is that right?
Actually, on my third year in PhD, so master's and basic 1 year master's and 4 years PhD is the program at U of T. On my third year, I also got into Glenn Gould School Artist Diploma Program because the summer before I actually sang my first Carmen in Ottawa. And so my voice teacher here, first I started here with Jean MacPhail, and she said, I think this is going to go somewhere. I would like to have a better look at you. I don't want to just be like, where is Beste? In which lab is Beste? Like, you know, we need to control things a bit better. So I applied, and thank God they liked me and I loved them. So I took a year off from my PhD and I went to Glenn Gould School. And again, it was such a great choice. The first day I came to Toronto, I just took a walk and I saw the conservatory building. Yeah. And I went inside. I told the administration people, I asked them, if I ever want to come here. And they showed me the fee and I'm like, impossible, I cannot come here. And I'm like, I hope one day, you know, maybe. Because for networking, it is so important to meet people from the world here, from the music world here.
Yeah.
And the building is so inspiring. It's so beautiful. The conservatory, the Kerner Hall and, you know, Mazzolini Hall. It's just such a wonderful, wonderful institution. So eventually I got a scholar. I got a scholarship. So I was there also saving money through my PhD too. So I felt so lucky. And I think GGS helped me to see, you know, the strengths and the weaknesses in me. I came to this country and I started, you know, auditioning, working with Jean MacPhail, and that's another story. Oh my God. I kneeled down before Jean.
Oh, she's
for her to accept me. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you begged her, did you?
Oh, it was basically, she saw me, she got an email, she received an email from me. But she's like, oh, this is a PhD student. She wants to take lessons. She did not think that I was that serious. Then I followed her at a noon concert at U of T music school. I saw that there is a noon concert. I'm like, I am absolutely sure all the teachers are there. And I go there. I talk to students around and I tell them why I'm there. And they're like, oh, don't worry, we'll help you. They showed me. Oh. And I found Jean. I mean, it was not literally bowing or anything, but I was just like, hi, I emailed you and you didn't answer. You didn't reply to me. But I am speaking, but tears are coming out of my eyes. It is so important for me. Yes. That's why I couldn't stay in Turkey. So I want to do this. I promised to myself when I was 5 years old, I need to try this. She's like, oh, this is so important for you. please come to my house and just, sing an audition for me. So it all started with that. And she saw that I was really committed to it. And I knew that I was committed. I knew that I was strong. Mm-hmm. If someone told me, you are no good, I was not going to give up. I knew I was strong enough. But there were certain things, connections, or certain rules in auditioning, repertoire, so much knowledge that I got from those wonderful, instructors, professors, coaches. And GGS gave me my partner in crime on stage, Rachel Andrist.
Oh.
Another wonderful, wonderful coach, Peter Tiefenbach.
Yes.
Leon Major, one of my favorite directors. I mean, I learned so much.
Lucky. From him. Yeah. Wow.
And like many more people like that. Gee, so I was so, so happy I made that choice and I took that year off to start my journey with Glenn Gould School.
Wonderful. What was one of your favorite experiences at the GGS?
Okay, another person that I am so thankful to know is Uri Meyer.
Oh.
Maestro Uri Meyer. He really taught me how to listen to an orchestra while performing, how being a soloist means a good collaborator. So my favorite time was, I was about to graduate and just leave to Calgary Opera for their Emerging Artist Program. And for Murray Schafer's 80th year celebration, RCO was putting on Adieu Robert Schumann by Murray Schafer. And Uri told, the school that I should be taking this on. And oh my God, the preparation process, it was such a magnificent time for me that I learned, I evolved. I just feel very thankful for that experience. Also the concert with RCO, which was just such a magnificent experience. Until then, I had performances on stage with orchestras, or later I did, of course, I performed all of roles with orchestras and companies, but that one was so special, so special. So I'm forever thankful for that and for Uri Meyer.
Very nice. After you left school and you began to work with other singers in master classes or workshops, who would you say is your greatest mentor in your travels?
I have a couple of mentors that I respect so much. And I think in our profession, it is very important to have your team, a team of great mentors. And in this team, I have, for sure, Rachel Andrist, my current voice teacher, Laura Brooks Rice, whom I met at ICAV in 2013. Yeah. And Marilyn Horn.
There you go.
And Warren Jones. Uri is still... Uri and Leon Major, they're still my mentors as well. I learned so many different things from all of them. And these people, any problem I have or anything I want to ask, they would be there for me. And I would be there for them if they ever, ever needed me. So I feel very lucky to have them in my life.
That's so nice. And I know that Rachel is moving to Montreal.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. She just got a new position there, but I'm sure you'll stay in touch.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think Montreal is not that far away. And I think it's a great excuse to visit beautiful Montreal because it's such a beautiful city.
For sure.
I'm very, very happy for her. And both Opéra de Montréal and Rachel, they are lucky to have each other. I think that's going to be a great collaboration
for both
parties.
Early on, when you were cast as Mercedes in a production of Carmen, you were suddenly asked to sing the role of Carmen herself with only 1 hour's notice. How on earth did you do that?
So, of course, that's the very dramatic side of it. Only 1 hour's notice. I was Mercedes. I was not the cover of Carmen. I was not an original cover.
Oh, wow.
I have sung the role 4 years ago in Ottawa. That was my first Carmen ever. And that was with a chamber ensemble. It was not with orchestra.
Ah.
And so I knew that might have happened on like 3 hours before. So not 1 hour before. Ah. 3 hours before. I heard there is the possibility that I may need to step up. And I was asked if, just what about some Carmen? It was a bit shocking, but my shock, I didn't have time to be really shocked. So it was like 5 minutes of being in shock. And I just opened the Carmen part.
Yes.
And I told to myself, that year I took my second year off from my PhD. I was still a student at U of T. It's like, you know, PhD psychology. And I was still testing people in Calgary as well for my PhD, for my dissertation, for my final work. So I told to myself, okay, Beste, this is an opportunity. It's a nerve-wracking opportunity because, I mean, I knew that might have happened 3 hours before, but our soloist wanted to actually try it out. So I actually went on stage after our soloist finished with Habanera. She started. And after Habanera, she decided that it was better for her to, you know, just rest. And so I told to myself, this is an opportunity. And this is really a teamwork. We're going to make it happen for our company. Also, girl, if you go there and you choke on your voice, it means that, good try, go back to your PhD. And try to do something good with your research. But if you go there and you have a blast, be forever thankful this is your path and you are quitting the PhD.
Wow.
Or sign from God. Because before I went to Calgary and I took my year off, UFT gave me a second year off. They are not really supposed to do that. The dean said, okay, this person has a different interest. For the last time, we are giving her this opportunity to really find out what she really wants to do with her life.
Mm.
So I told to myself, and God, God, give me a sign, you know, otherwise, okay, I'll come back, I'll do my research, and I will still work in music and developmental psychology, but I want to be good at what I am doing. I want to feel satisfied. It is not just enough for people to say, oh, you're wonderful, you're great. But I should feel like I'm challenging myself and just improving every day. So I went on. I had the best time of my life. It was amazing feeling. Yay. You know, Jubilee Auditorium is a huge hall. And Timothy Vernon was conducting. He is like the best person you can ask for in such kind of a situation. Everyone was so positive. Everyone was so supportive. I could feel the energy coming from the audience. Oh my God, I can't even speak. I get excited. I just go back to that time. It is just to finding out, yes, I can just go for this. It was exhilarating. It was brilliant. It was terrific. It just was a aha moment. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have what it takes. And it wasn't perfect. Do you think it was perfect? No, it wasn't perfect. I didn't sing the role in 4 years. I wasn't coached on the role necessarily for that purpose. But it showed that I had the stamina to sing the role.
Yeah.
To improve on the character. So it gave me the courage to go back, talk to my supervisor, and focus 100% on my career as a musician.
I'm so happy that you had that aha moment because of the direction that you went in after that. And here we are. You know, those moments are star-making when someone steps in the last minute into a role That happened to somebody else that I know, George Maswell, who stepped in at the last minute to sing the demon barber of Fleet Street in Sweeney Todd. And he was recognized for that. He knew the role just like you did in advance some years before. And all of a sudden he was called in with no notice to sing this. He sang it from the pit. And the other person was lip syncing on stage. And
it was the same thing the first day. Then the second performance, I had to go on stage fully.
Because, oh my God.
Because we weren't sure if it was a temporary, you know, situation, because it really happened to the person on the day off. We are humans. We are not machines. Yeah. Like, those things happen. Yeah. And okay, it is really, you know, we hear all these stories. People are, you know, it is storm making, but in our situation, I really thought it as a team work.
That's great.
Because I was a young artist and she was an established opera singer. And she was also very supportive of me. Without having that, it would be so hard for me to do it. And I was proud that I could take the challenge and do my best to make it work. But I was so thankful for her friendship and support. It is not easy, and that can happen to anyone.
That's right. And you weren't there to take the role away from her. You were there to support her, to support the production, and to make it work for everybody.
And for your company, of course.
Yeah, for the whole company. And just so happened that it helped you to grow as well and figure out what was right for you. So
exactly, exactly.
So exciting. It's double the work, right? You had to know your own role and still dig up the Carmen from somewhere. And I just wonder if you would always encourage a young artist to learn, if you're in a supporting role, to learn a lead role as well, so that they're ready for these moments. What do you think?
Generally, opera companies, they have a cover. In that time, we didn't.
Yeah.
But if you are singing a supporting role, and if you know that in your near future, the lead role may happen too, start learning. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I don't want to encourage you saying that learn the other role you may step in, because it is really what we do in productions needs to be with love, friendship, support, and teamwork. Mm-hmm. For your own development, start learning and ask the lead artist to help you, maybe, you know, observe. If you're also learning the role, it will really help you to understand the character and the relationships between characters better. It is not just learning the notes. It is about the relationships too. So yes, of course, we always are asked, how do you see yourself in 5 years? You know, doing which role, singing what role? And if that role is in your bucket list, start. That's the best opportunity ever. And you have someone who is doing it right next to you.
Yeah.
What opportunity would be better than that?
Yeah, great, great inspiration right there. Yeah. You always appear to be very prepared in a rock solid way. I see it. I see the confidence it shows to me, and I'm sure for everybody else. What is your routine when you decide you want to learn a new piece of music so that you know that you're going to nail it?
Thank you. I'm glad that it shows that I work hard. Well, I mean, my preparation process is very different from project to project. So I first take the piece and I try to understand the challenges. So I need to know how long would I need. I mean, unless if it is a, you know, you need to do it next week, then it happens. You just force yourself for it. But the best learning and the best preparation happens when you are relaxed and you actually are able to put things in time. So even if I have productions coming back to back, I would like to put things in order so that every day or in the morning it is one piece, in the evening it's another piece. That they may be modern, they may be more, you know, contemporary or more, you know, classic. It is important to know what are the challenges. And, you know, I start tackling them. And I make sure that my partner in crime on stage, Rachel Andrews, Tears, or, you know, like other ones, Laura, Marilyn. And I try to be in touch with people who know me and my voice, who can give me the right feedback. And I try to make sure that I am ready a week before. If this is not a very short term and quick thing,
yes,
I make sure that I am ready even a week before to really do it. So that I go and that can be just me, Beste, exploring and finding other ways. Because preparing the music is really maybe 40% of it, I find, bringing out a character, even if it is concert work, recital work. It's so important to have the liberty to explore, imagine, find symbols.
Yes.
To, you know, make it even more interesting.
I've heard of so many people who say that they finish their performances. You might do 4 or 6 or 8 performances of a role, an opera, and you finish it and the next day. You're singing the whole thing in your head because it's perfectly finally memorized. But the way that you're approaching it by being ready 1 week prior, that's, I think, a huge advantage. You've got it ingrained in you already before you even start the staging and set foot on that stage. And so I bet those after the fact feelings probably are moot. They don't happen to you. Am I right?
Well, I mean, no, it doesn't happen to me. You're right. But I think I have been a bit lucky because there were just a few instances where I had to be really, you know, ready in 2 weeks because the music was given in, the, you know, just 2 weeks before. Those things happen also in a more contemporary production. The composer may want something different and they can give you something different. You know, those things happen. See, also for that, since last minute things can happen, it is great to be prepared.
Yeah.
Pieces, you know, for the part that you were already given. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I have so many friends who are in musical theater. They're just doing shows, 10, 15 shows back to back, or they are doing one production and then they fly to another place. So sometimes you cannot just be ready. But if it was a perfect world, I'd rather be always ready 1 week before.
Yeah,
because I went to 2 schools at the same time and I did my, you know, classwork at the, you know, it's for psychology, lab work, applications for grad school. That wasn't easy. It took a lot of time. Also my singing and, you know, performing exams and stuff. I always had to schedule myself. I always had to have a really good timeline. Otherwise, I wouldn't get more than 4 hours of sleep. I need at least 7 hours of sleep.
Yes.
So that's why I always try to be, you know, I don't want surprises. I would like to, if possible, control this whole universe. You cannot always. But, and sometimes you just have to, okay, you have to do this. Life is not perfect. Yes. You will just do whatever you can.
100%. How do you say Wonder Woman in Turkish?
Actually, I wanted to say hello to you in my mask, which is done by a friend of mine. It's the Wonder Woman mask. But
really?
I just got it because I think we are all wonder people during quarantine, you know, trying to do our best.
Yes, we certainly are. You have an incredibly spellbinding stage presence. And I'm curious how you learned your stagecraft. It's not something that is always there naturally for everybody. Maybe it was for you, but was there one person that you would attribute a lot of your stagecraft ability learning from?
There are certain directors that I learned a lot from, but I think the first thing was, first of all, thank you very much. I'm so happy, like you're just so complimentary and thank you, I really appreciate it. I think I came to this wonderful country and I realized that I have nothing to lose. Sometimes we are awkward, different, black sheep, you know what I mean? Oh. No, I just realized that I was learning certain rules about auditioning and performing. Yeah. But whatever I did, there was a certain way people were doing things. And I'm like, if I try to do that, it will look fake, not real. So I will, of course, learn certain things, but it will not, I mean, I will still be that Turkish girl who is doing things a bit differently. So I decided that I have nothing to lose. So that gives, ignorance is a bliss sometimes. This gives you just courage to try and not to be ashamed of yourself.
And be authentic.
I have this accent. I would just, you know, move my hands and legs so freely, walking on stage and saying, "Hi, I am Beste Kalender and I will sing for you this and this." I would wear all my jewelry because diamond is a girl's best friend. I had my own ways of doing things and they were all wrong.
Oh no, they're not wrong. They're awesome.
Jean Macfield would say, "Best, it is beautiful, I love it, but you know, maybe not chandelier earrings with a tiara, you know."
That part of your outgoing personality is what I love about you, and there are so many other things, but one thing that I've noticed in, you know, being connected with you on social media and having met you once or twice is how easily and happily you support other singers with a thumbs up, a compliment, or a comment. So let me ask you the psychology question now. Why do you think it's so hard for most singers to freely compliment another singer?
Well, I mean, connected to this question, I will go back to your previous question. So among all these wonderful directors I work with, I learned a lot from my colleagues. Again, from the psychology point of view, observation is so important. Our colleagues and being a team member teaches us so many things. So when I'm in a production, I observe what my colleagues do and I take the things I like to see if they would work for me in my preparation process. We learn from each other. And I think being inspired by my colleagues has been a great thing for my, you know, craft as well. So when I see a colleague doing something inspiring, or they're trying, or they had some improvement in something, that's an inspiration. And that's part of our teamwork. It wasn't the old days to be the diva and, you know, hate everyone but yourself. And so I think it empowers me. When I see and appreciate someone's good work, it inspires me and it empowers me. It shows me that it is possible to improve, to get better, to be hopeful, especially in our business, where we are always complaining that our art form is not appreciated enough. So we need to support each other even more so that our friends, our colleagues, they will continue just like we do. Yeah. And this thing is going to get bigger. I mean, about some people, I have met more friends who are like me than those, you know, who are having it a hard time complimenting or making a fake, really. Great, you know, the sugarcoating people. That's their loss. I'm sorry.
Yes.
That will find them. That will bite them really bad. Because karma is a, you know what? The podcast.
Well, it's true that it doesn't take anything away from us as an individual or an artist or a singer to tell someone else that they did a beautiful job or that you like how they sound or that they inspire you. It doesn't diminish our artistry or what anyone else would think of us by complimenting another person. So,
I mean, also, I'm not saying, you know, just sugarcoat everyone you see.
No.
I mean, if you are not going to say something positive, you can also not try not to speak about it. It's so fine. But also, you know, I also don't like fake people. I have a certain team of friends that I trust so much. And there are so many mezzo-sopranos in there. And we trust each other. We ask each other. And we grow together.
Yeah.
The very important thing about our craft is everyone is unique in something. We are not the same. So even though we take little things from each other, being inspired and such, those unique things we need to work on and make it even more unique so we are going to stand out. That's very important. But that should not bring in hostility. That should just bring more support to each other. We should actually maybe force each other to be unique. So our business will be even more interesting.
So we're the tiara and the chandelier earring together.
We all have tiaras. You just have to find, you know, your own tiara. That's it.
If I had one word to describe you with, it would be fearless.
Oh.
What about you? What is the one word that you think encompasses yourself?
I think I am someone whose heart is just filled with lots of love. And I'm someone who is just trying to find the goodness and the good side of people. And I think the optimism, the positive self coming through this love, the understanding of making love my religion, is the main aspect of my personality, I think. I love you people. You know, you'll try hard for me to not, you know, love you maybe, but I will try to do it until I can't anymore.
That's fantastic. That to me, the one word then maybe that you're trying to describe is selfless.
I mean, no one is really 100% selfless. I don't think so. But I just want to believe that people have some goodness in them. And even if I see a negative act, I try to be objective and try to find a reason. I am absolutely sure there are so many instances that I hurt certain people without noticing too. We are not perfect. But what I know is I have so much love for people. I mean, I am a person of color. And I have also, like, life is not just rainbows and, you know, pink clouds and unicorns. But even though when I was directed many, you know, ignorant, some racist questions or comments about my culture, my hair color, my accent, I try to just calm down and with my calmness explain them why what they said was just ignorant and it didn't make sense. Otherwise, Kira, it would be so hard to live anywhere.
100%. Very smart of you to do that as well. You're noted for your performances of Carmen, which we've spoken about, and Rosina and the old lady in Candide. And I have to say, I've heard some of your coloratura and it's just stunning. So I'm a big fan there as well. I just love you.
Oh, I love you too.
But so here's a standard interview question. What is the role that you haven't done yet, but have always dreamt of singing?
Charlotte Werther.
Oh, yes.
Such a graceful, elegant character. I love French also. I really enjoy singing in French. It's such a beautiful language to sing in. But also recently I have been performing all these very bubbly characters and with my castanets, even the Cinderella I did, you know, like, I mean, I love dancing and singing and, you know, everything is so bubbly and happy. I would be so happy to go deeper and in my soul and look for different characters. It really helps to develop as an artist, to find different qualities in yourself. Mm-hmm. So Charlotte is not like anything I have done so far. I don't think so. I mean, I have done pretty sad or dark. I have played dark characters. I mean, Carmen actually is quite dark itself. But that elegance, that she's a different kind of lady. I would love to bring her to life.
Yes, so we'll be watching for that. Okay, so let's move on to something very recent that you were involved in a performance in Kerner Hall during COVID-19.
Oh, yeah.
And this was for composer Patricia Moorhead's 80th birthday celebration. Tell us a little bit about that event. What did you sing? What is Patricia's composing style like for you? What are the poet's words and what language did you sing in?
It was a really wonderful event that we all the musicians in Mold, we needed this. We knew it.
Oh, yeah.
It's brought us so much hope. Even when I got the call from Patricia about this concert, I said, sure. I didn't ask any question. I am a much more professional performer. I asked, what are the conditions? rehearsal, the fee. But this time I was just like, sure. And I even forgot that it's COVID, I sang for Patricia on her 5 years ago, on her 75th birthday concert as well. And that was also wonderful. I also sang Philip Moorhead's Maestro's three pieces, French pieces as well. They were so wonderful. So this time I have performed one piece that she composed for Philip Moorhead, for her husband, on his 70th birthday.
Okay.
And I also sang the world premiere of her most recent, actually, composition, which was A Shimmering. The poetry was by Sharon Singer, another wonderful Canadian woman. And Sharon was inspired by a summer evening by the lake and moon and the crickets and... it is really, really lovely poetry. And I have a feeling that may turn into something even bigger. Because it was a really nice aria and I'm waiting to hear more about it. So it may have a future. That song is so beautiful. And I think I had a character. So my character is a muse and the muse is inspired by that beautiful scene. So it was such a beautiful, inspiring piece, which also reminded me of the Mediterranean nights back in Turkey. So,
oh, yeah.
The other piece was Die Taube, the dove. It is a German text. That was more of a modern, atonal, dissonant piece. But having said that, within itself, the melody had such a great communication with the words. It was such a great thrilling experience to sing both of them. The Die Taube is about the dove by Maria Rilke, the poet. Oh. And the poetry is about really the bird leaving home and experiencing outside and appreciating being back. And those who always stayed home would never understand that. And how time passes and how we change, how things may get even heavier on our shoulders. So, I mean, I found it a bit relatable because a lot of people in Canada, we left our homes and we made Canada our home. And we have so many people back home in our native lands. And their understanding of our experiences and our understanding of our struggles are quite different. It looks so easy for so many people, what we do here, how we live our lives here, but we know what kind of challenges we have been through. So it was quite relatable. That's, I guess, also why I really loved performing that piece too. Words are as important as the music for most of us. That's why we have to learn the languages too, right? So
yes.
It's so thrilling. Patricia really surprised me with her latest world premiere because it was such a tonal song, aria. And you could hear from the accompaniment, the shimmering on the lake. You could really feel it in your bones when you were singing it. So it was thrilling. We also heard in the program some pieces inspired by Margaret Atwood.
Okay.
There was the edible flute. I loved it. Like after woman. It was wonderful. And as far as I know, the Die Taube that I sang, it was composed for an art song recital at the Chicago Musicians Club of Women So it is, I guess, the oldest, as far as I know, the oldest women club in Chicago. And it was composed for that occasion and also for, of course, her husband, the wonderful Philip Moorhead. Yeah.
Yes, very nice. I've met both of them, but only just quickly in Perry Sound. Since we've been speaking about Kerner Hall, I'm aware that you have something else coming up there soon, and that is super exciting. Tell us what this performance will be and who it is led by and who else will be performing with you.
Sure. In November, we are celebrating Beethoven at Kerner Hall. Yes, finally. And a wonderful friend and one of the most incredible musicians ever, a treasure, Stuart Goodyear, will be leading the performance that I will be part of. And we are going to be performing Beethoven's Ninth. And the cast will be people from many different backgrounds. It is going to be a wonderful combination of, you know, people singing of peace, singing their heart out.
So Beethoven's Ninth with the Mendelssohn Choir?
With Mendelssohn Choir. Yes, that's right.
Wonderful.
Right. Yeah. November 20th is the day. And we are all very, very excited for it. Apart from everything else, to be able to do this, take a break from this quarantine life, is a wonderful thing. I hope we'll be able to share it with as many people as possible.
And my understanding is that they are selling tickets so that there can be an audience, but it's in a distanced capacity due to COVID. And so Kerner Hall have advertised that ticket sales are already on for this. Is that right?
Yes, you can already subscribe or purchase tickets for this special occasion. Yes, social distance is very important. Kerner Hall months ago started trying to see how they can make it work for their hall so that they can still fill people's souls with beautiful music. So they changed their whole season to chamber music, and it's gonna be, I guess, maximum 50 people will be inside with all the rules according to social distancing. Even on stage, like this performance I have done for Patricia's birthday celebration, we were very careful backstage, on stage. I felt incredibly safe performing there, standing there. Even when we were taking our bows, we were very careful about distancing with the masks and everything. So they are doing their best, and that's what's happening in Europe too, with companies who are doing chamber concerts and recitals. And they are taking the similar measures, and they are trying to make sure that everyone is comfortable.
Yeah.
I am so happy they found a way to bring people music.
Yes, me too.
I know you performed there too, right?
Yes, a couple of times. Yeah. I hope to go back.
It's such a wonderful hall.
Oh, it sure is. It's wonderful to sing in there. And I wanted to say that I really, truly hope that things progress properly and toward November, that everything goes as planned for you for this performance.
Or, it's going to be wonderful. Yeah, I hope so too, because we never know. We don't know what this unwanted guest wants to do. Through a second wave, third wave, we are all being careful and hoping for the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and we're going to see. I just try to take my morning walks in nature and do my work, learn my other you know, performances I have too, which I am still too scared to announce things, because then there's, I announced this, but this is not happening.
Yes, for sure.
Well, keep it positive, people. It's okay. We are all there. We're in this together.
Aside from your musical genius and your psychological studies and the background that you've built for yourself, you obviously are a very creative person, and you have got another venture on the go, which are entitled Tales from Beste the Mezzo. Would you please tell us what inspired you to start this and what are some of the messages that you convey?
Sure. I'm so glad you mentioned this. The production that I was in, Candide, with Edmonton Opera, was the first performance canceled in Canada. So end of March, first, you know, we did our dress rehearsal, had our celebration. 4 hours later, everyone was at the place that I was staying and we were having a wake. We were all shocked because we are preparing ourselves. You know, I was thinking, tomorrow I should go and buy some thank you cards and gifts for my friends. Instead, I was packing. So I came back right away. So this is towards the end of March. And it didn't take long until everything in Toronto, Ontario also shut down, as well as in Turkey. All the children, they were stuck in their houses, in their homes, and the parents did not know what to do with their kids, like how to really keep them active or happy. Everyone was feeling depressed. And I also have training as a Music Together teacher. Music Together is a program where you support children and their families with certain programs, and you teach music from a developmental psychology angle. You just support their musical understanding and cognition according to their, you know, proper developmental stages. And this program has been constructed according to all this developmental psychology research, some of which I was part of when I was a PhD student.
I see.
So I also got that training as a teacher. So I'm also a certified teacher for that. So I realized all these kids being stuck and opera companies, they all shut down. Musicals, there is no art going on really. Everything is just archival, right? The archives are just coming out.
Yeah.
So I decided to do something for children. Also, in Turkey, April 23rd was it marked the 100-year anniversary of International Children's Day in Turkey. As a person who was raised in Turkey, I am used to seeing a lot of children from all over the world visiting Turkey and celebrating all children together and playing. So that's what I remember from my childhood. And I knew that this is the 100-year anniversary, but they cannot invite anyone. The children are stuck at home. So I decided to have just a 4-video project, bilingual, so that children in Turkey and children here, Canada or abroad, whoever can understand, speak English, or even not, because up until 4 years old, they can find anything interesting, you know, children, and they can learn any language they want.
Yeah.
Or supposed to. So I started this, and it attracted attention from media right away, also from the government in Turkey as well. So they started live streaming, some of them. But then it got out of control. And, you know, I think I finished like the 12th one recently. And I mean, it has been almost 4 months it has been going on, because, you know, when you get voice messages from wonderful 5-year-olds saying that they loved it, and when is the next one coming? And you just cannot stop. My main thing was first to be able to celebrate children, give something for the parents without, you know, calling it just screen time. Something that the children can learn from. Because I changed the tales. If it is a classic tale, all these Disney stories, they have maybe improper or challenging, conflicting subjects about family relations and children, or the things we want to teach a young girl or a young boy or a young person without really assigning genders.
Yes.
So I took the tales, I did some changes, and I dramatized it with, you know, I just did added some drama with puppets, most of which I made myself. And I combined them with a tune, which may be from an opera inspired by that tale, or a Turkish folk song. Also, I told some traditional Turkish tales and translated them because I want also the kids here to learn about the Turkish culture. So
wonderful.
I wanted to present the culture. I wanted to introduce the kids to different rhythmic structures, tonality, opera, classical music.
Yeah.
And, you know, give people a little break, you know.
Well,
I think it has been a wonderful experience for me, and I think the parents have been enjoying it.
I love the puppet show. I love your little puppets. And
I did one for artists too. Yes, save the arts.
Yeah, that I wanted to ask you. So the ant and the grasshopper is about saving the arts, and you put a beautiful message out there for all of us. It almost made me cry.
Oh, thank you. Well, the thing is, the translation of the grasshopper is, we call them the August bug. They just come out in August, they make all these sounds, and then we don't know what happens to them. And then I knew for a fact that those bugs are actually spending years and years under the ground to grow up. Then they have to mate, and because they just have 4 weeks on Earth, that's why they're, you know, they have to sing so loud so that they can mate and they can just drop some eggs to the ground before they leave the world totally. So I'm like, that's not fair. And I'm like, we are like those grasshoppers. You know, because a lot of our artist friends are living on CERB right now, and soon it's going to end too, and people are really wondering what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And we are getting some nice but some not so nice advice from people from other professions. And they should understand that without us, they wouldn't be able to do what they're doing so productively.
Yeah.
It includes everything. TV work, musicals. They don't have to like classical music, but any type of music, they need to support. They can't just close their eyes and ears and just like play the, you know, Three Monkeys. You cannot do this. Because I know the parents are watching it. Also to understand that, you know, I am primarily an opera singer who has so much love for children and a great interest in developmental psychology as well. But I care for the future of music. I care for the future of the arts so much. And the reason why I present some tunes from the operas or musical theater or orchestral works is because I want those little children to have the exposure from early on.
Yeah.
So they won't be like, you know, this is something for snobs. No, our music is for everyone.
Yeah. And so the grasshopper is us, all the musicians, all of the singers, and we work and work at our craft. And then suddenly all the doors were closed and everyone retreated to their homes. And the grasshopper was by himself and he was hungry and lonely. He went knocking on the ant's door and asked to be let in and asked for some food. And the ant said to him, well, we've been busy storing our food and we've been busy preparing for this. What have you been doing? And the grasshopper said, I have been making music and learning music and providing you with entertainment. Now I need you to put your arms around me and welcome me into your home and keep me safe and dry. And that's what we're all asking of everybody right now, is don't forget that while you consume our art and you enjoy our music, that we're struggling and we really need your support. So that was just a wonderful video.
I am so glad you enjoyed it. That's why I introduced it third person, a third character, the bee. Because we also have those in our lives who believe in us, who try their best to help. And we just need other people to also give an ear and just hear them out too. Because they understand us. They know that it's a very complex structure, like what humans are doing in the world. And we all need each other. We all
Absolutely.
Need each other.
We do. Our discussion is coming to a close, but before that happens, I know that you have a piece of music that you would like to share with all of us by Rinaldo Ahn. And I would love it if you please would tell us a little bit about this piece and why you have chosen it.
Sure. Acloris is one of my favorite pieces that I have performed. And apart from performing that piece, giving me a lot of opportunities in my career, I find it very relatable to our current situation, because Acloris, the lyrics, they include lots of love, devotion, and ecstasy. But those words were written when the poet himself was imprisoned because of his thoughts, because of him being bisexual. And he found that place in his heart, which was not about sarcasm or hate, but just pure love and beauty. And those lyrics are so inspiring, especially during the times when we feel very stuck in where we are, what we are doing. I just wanted to share this so that, just to remind people, hope is there, beauty is there, it is in you. Just please make an effort to find it. Please keep being hopeful and happy as much as possible. With my best day wishes.
Yes, such an important message. Who is your accompanist on this recording?
Rachel Andres.
I knew it.
Actually, this was done in 2016 at Kerner Hall when I was a Riri Banks Fellow. And Poyo Hamdi, he actually recorded it for us. And Rachel is her usual self, just playing beautifully.
Very nice.
This is from our hearts to yours.
Thank you so much, Beste. This has been a wonderful conversation. Such a pleasure to speak to you and to learn all about you. And boy, oh boy, we're all going to just love you that much more now.
Oh, Kira, it was really my pleasure. Thank you very much for including me to your series. And it is a wonderful thing you are doing. And to introduce me and my colleagues and so many wonderful people in Canada to the audiences, we really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a great colleague. And I can't wait to hear you soon too.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, once again, folks, if you've been paying attention, there is an upcoming concert in Kerner Hall, which Beste is involved with, and tickets are for sale now. So thank you all for listening. Thank you. You have been listening to mezzo-soprano Beste Kalender singing Reynaldo Ahn's A Cloris, accompanied by Rachel Andrist. We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Classical Voice Canada. Thank you for listening.